This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
How much is money?
It's nothing.
Ballin', ballin'.
Alapa.
Premium or nothing.
Them or nothing.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Level up and get
Welcome back, everybody, to Couch Chronicles Therapist After Dark.
One more game.
Welcome back to the couch, ladies.
Yes.
It's good to have you.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's get started with some mindfulness. For today's mindfulness practice, we'll do a breathing exercise. So I ask that you get into a comfortable position.
Mm-hmm.
You can close your eyes if that feels good to you, or just take a little gaze. Noticing the positioning of your body. How it might be planted on the surface beneath you. Take a moment to notice your feet planted firmly on the ground. And make any final adjustments before coming into stillness. We'll start with a few deep breaths in through the nose and out through the mouth. And as you breathe in, imagine that the air is filled with peace and calm. Allow it to fill your entire body. And as you breathe out, imagine the air leaving any stress and tension. You can say in your mind, I breathe in peace and calm. I breathe out stress and tension. Do that for 5 breaths on your own count. Breathe in, peace and calm. And breathe out, stress and tension. When you get to your final breath, take a moment to notice your body. Notice any sensations or urges that might be present. Allow any thoughts to drift away as we begin to return the space with each other. Stretch a bit if you need to. taking one last deep intentional breath here at the end for gently fluttering the eyes open. Okay. Quick breathing practice.
Mm-hmm.
What did you all notice about yourselves and about your body during the practice?
I noticed a little bit of tension right here.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed for a brief moment me trying to attach some type of meaning or cause and effect, I think, mm-hmm. to that, oh, my bun is tight or something of that nature. But it was very kind of quick, sure. with the thought coming and going. I noticed that there was certain questions in between the directives when there was like a space of silence of like me asking, did I miss something? Was I supposed to do something that I didn't necessarily hear? I noticed some chanting of the like
phrases,
breathe in, free, breathing peace, release tension, like that type of thing. And then some physical sensations of like my muscles being active and moving. And that's pretty much it. Some thoughts, I would say, about like what I'm going to do next or like later on today. But it, again, not too much preoccupation where I got like carried away and stuck there.
Yeah. So it sounds like your mind offered you some things, but it was fleeting for the most part. It didn't stay, or you weren't necessarily holding on to it. It sounds like you had a pretty full experience as well with noticing some sensations, acknowledging some thoughts, and bringing yourself back to the phrase.
Yeah.
Any sensations or things that surprised you that you maybe hadn't recognized before engaging in the practice?
No surprise sensations. I think the ones that I did have, I was already kind of like have experienced them earlier. And just kind of allowed them to be, instead of like fixating, especially when there's certain sensations that I don't like find pleasant happening, but
not wanting to hold on to them too much.
Exactly.
Don't know that.
Wanting to let go of me, actually.
Right. What about you, Jay?
I think, I felt tired all of a sudden. I just felt like I wanted to.
Maybe you
noticed that
you were tired.
I noticed. I did. I noticed that I was tired as I was breathing in peace and I was breathing out like, stressed and, the directives you were giving. But I remember I was like, okay, well, make the word peace your anchor, because I feel like that's the season I've kind of been on, wanting to experience peace, wanting to stay in my peace, be in my peace. But I also felt like I felt like I was in a trance. I don't know how to explain it.
Like it felt like a, what word did Stephanie use?
Yes. Which one?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I just felt like I was in a trance and I was just like with it. And I did notice some sensation like in my arms, and those type of body sensation. I just noticed that there was no urge for me to kind of like interact with it. And then I kind of just went back, and I think the word peace just kind of kept being like a remnant. And as I was breathing out anxiety, stress, and towards the end, I think I was naming like release stress, release anxiety, that type of thing internally. But that was it. But yeah, I kind of felt tired.
Okay, so I'm hearing that you maybe noticed that you were feeling tired. Any particular sensation that brought your awareness to that?
The urge, like my eyelids couldn't, like they wanted to stay closed as if I'm like sleeping. Yes. And you know how your limbs just kind of, you feel your limbs just dropping?
Yes. Yeah.
Like in that like state? Yeah. My limbs just felt like I'm in a bed, but I'm not in a bed. Like I just dropped. I was like, oh, hey girl, are you tired? Like what's happening?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And are these things that you noticed before getting into the practice, or were there some sensations that surprised you?
They definitely surprised me. I did not feel or notice like fatigue, tired, or wanting to sleep.
Yeah.
That type of thing until you say close your eyes.
Slow down does for us.
I
bet you that's going to help you make some decisions.
That part. Yeah.
Thank you for practicing.
Thank you. That was really good.
My own experience, selfishly, I choose this one because it is one that I can also participate in and instruct. So I felt really grounded to the words of inhaling peace and calm and exhaling stress and tension. I did have some thoughts about, like, did I provide enough instruction? Is this pause going to be awkward on camera? But nothing that I really held on to, just some thoughts similar to Stephanie, just kind of coming and going.
I know that's a thought that came to my mind when I was, like, chanting. You guys saw that TikTok video, maybe YouTube too, where she's like, she's zen, she's in the room, she's like, I don't give a fuck. Release the fuck. So part of my piece was like, don't give a fuck. Release the fuck. So I remember that's what it was. Like, I was like, Jay, don't give a fuck. Give less fucks.
Yeah.
So, like, that type of thing. So that came to mind. So
I love this practice. It's
probably for sure.
More regularly than others.
Yeah.
Sometimes I switch up the words, but
that's a good one.
It's helpful to kind of imagine yourself being filled with the
things. Yeah, and release everything. And yeah.
Yourself releasing the things that you
can. For sure. So, we need a good mindfulness. Yeah. We need a good grounding.
Encouraging our listeners to, you know, maybe sometimes choose your own words to receive and release when you're doing some of these practices as well.
Good deal. Yeah.
All right, let's get into it. What are we talking about today?
Something that I'm currently engaging in right now.
Say it again for the people.
We are talking about ADHD, which is a big buzzword. Really, everybody has it this day and age, but we're going to talk a little bit about it from the perspective of diagnosis, symptoms, talking about, like, how.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
It can look maybe some, I would say, less familiar or less common ways in which that it can show up, especially in the Black community, especially if you're a woman, because contrary to popular belief, it's almost like they just started researching women. Like, I don't know. There's all these new
research now.
Exactly. And more literature and more knowledge about, like, not only women's, like, physical bodies, like, from the medical aspect, but, like, psyche wise, like, really, doing more of a look at, like, how certain things show up in women, because a lot of these things in the DSM were toward men, white and middle age.
Yes.
You know, middle class and middle age.
Yeah.
And so we're going to be talking about ADHD, which leads me to the confessional.
Confession.
Right.
What do people have to say? What is the problem?
Right, right. See, we're doing it right now.
So. Yeah.
Let's get to it. Right. I am a 26-year-old Black woman who just got diagnosed with ADHD inattentive type. And I'm feeling everything. Relief? Yeah, but mostly I'm angry as hell. My whole life, I was called lazy, spacey, moody, a mess. I would get punished, not supported. And due to the ignorance and the lack of resources, I know my family did their best, but sometimes their best still failed me. Now I'm realizing I've spent my entire 20s just trying to survive. Masking, overcompensating, constantly on the edge of falling apart while everyone else seemed to thrive. And now what? I get a label and some coping tools and I'm supposed to feel grateful? I don't know how people call this a gift. To me, it feels like I got cheated out of peace, progress, and a fair shot. Now I'm stuck starting over at 26. Oof.
Right.
That's heavy.
And I think,
exactly. I think there's so many women, men, but I think women, because men tend to get diagnosed with ADHD a lot younger in their lifespan versus women tend to get diagnoses in their like late 20s, early 30s. Mind you, that's a lot of time to go through life
and to struggle and try
and
to
not knowing kind of like what's going why on. Your mind and your actions show up the way that they do.
That makes sense to me though, right? Because I think that when most often boys are being diagnosed when they are presenting some sort of challenge or problem in the school space, right? When they're being disruptive, oftentimes young girls are kind of taught to adapt to their environment a lot sooner in life. Yeah. And so that word masking that you use will sometimes show up. And by masking, we mean like presenting yourself in a way that helps you to like avoid your flaws or be more capable. Right? So you maybe hear that term other places as well, right? But young girls learn how to do that a lot quicker. So sometimes ADHD will kind of slide under the radar. And like as a seasoned clinician, there are things that are kind of easy to point to see. But to the untrained eye, it maybe looks like she's disinterested or she's in a bad mood and not so much related to like, she's got some challenges with attention.
So what is ADHD?
Right.
Attention. We hear it, we coin it, disorder. But what is it? Yes. So attention deficit hyperactive disorder is the full out name of ADHD, but it really talks about folks who struggle with inattention. So that's the inability to stay focused for a prolonged period of time, completing a particular task, sticking with routines or a structure. And there are three different kind of ways in which that ADHD can show up. So you have the inattentive type, which is really focused around like being able to keep up with routines, being able to organize yourself, have structure. It also, this subgroup, often they make a lot of careless mistakes. You know, they tend to not finish tasks completely. So that's what that would look like. And then you have the hyperactive impulsive side. So this is for the folks who kind of have a motor in their back that never shuts off.
These are the people who
can talk and talk and talk and talk all day. They can run around. They have so much energy. They're very engaging. They're kind of like the life of the party, right? The person that will, is a party starter, the person that is always has the energy to be able to like entertain and to uplift other people. But it also can look like somebody who can't sit still, somebody who's constantly in movement, somebody who jumps from tasks and from interest to different interests, starting a new thing, right? They have a new a new hobby that they are into, right? They first, you know, in the beginning of the year, they were into sewing. In the middle of the year, they were into doing sculpture. And now at the end of the year, you know what? I'm going to be in theater. You know, so they tend to jump around often and don't always think about like the consequences or what might happen. They just feel like I can do it.
I
it's gonna be great. It's like, everything's gonna be awesome.
What about the executive functioning piece?
Yes. The decision making. Because ADHD is a spectrum that affects the prefrontal cortex, right? This part of our brain that has to do with planning, that has to do with execution, that has to do with organization. ADHD heavily impacts this part of the brain. So when we're looking at the ability to make decisions, that is heavily impacted, especially when we look at the inattention part of the ADHD, right? So if I have three options on the table, that's three too many for an ADHD. Because now my mind literally has to contemplate every single scenario, one of them. Every single thing. And then to the point where all this overload and activation shuts me down. Right? If you ever have problems figuring out what you're going to eat every day, you might be struggling with this executive dysfunction. Another one would be figuring out like the order to complete tasks. Right? Like how to like, should I do my laundry first? Should I, you know, read first or should I take a shower or should I do these things? So if you ever have challenges with having to figure out what order something will go, that might be part of the inattention.
How about, you know, doing three things at the same time?
Hyperactive, impulsive side there, right? That's the, oh, like I can brush my teeth while I also am on the phone, while I'm also simultaneously sewing on this thing. And then, oh, wait, I think I'm supposed to be cooking something at the same time. That's you?
She's in the room. She's in the room.
Can I ask? Do you complete all of those things?
Hell no.
Okay.
Shit. Right.
Now you're upset. No. And then also, I think that one that we didn't mention is the intensity and emotion, right?
Yeah.
Like your prefrontal cortex also allows you to kind of gauge the severity of things. Mm-hmm. And so when you experience ADHD, oftentimes the punishment doesn't match the crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really big reaction. And sometimes it can be quick and you can come down from that pretty mm-hmm. quickly. Mm-hmm. But the reaction is really big and it often can be jarring to other people experiencing it.
Where that hyperactivity and that impulsivity yep. type of shows up, right, is that there's a quick like mm-hmm. Activation in the system, which yep. then warrants a quick response
right.
from mm-hmm. without really contemplating the full picture of things.
Yep.
And then I said there was three types. The third is when you have the love
combination.
You have inattention and you have the hyperactivity.
Yeah.
And impulsivity. And we'll get more into what are maybe some not common yeah. things that mm-hmm. you might see that you know, easily be overlooked and just like, oh, this is a quirk.
Yes. You know, talking from like the emotion piece, I remember when I was younger, and I would get in trouble, something would happen. And the word that always stick to me, which is why sometimes with that word, I learned to embrace it now, but I used to like be annoyed with it. Like, you're too sensitive. Why are you overreacting? You're too sensitive. And that is something that someone with ADHD always get labeled because they have big feelings and they have these big emotions and not really understanding the fact that they are experiencing things at a higher intensity and trying to manage it. So,
did you guys notice though that all the symptoms for the most part that we acknowledged can be seen in other like mental health disorders and other challenges. So let's talk a little bit about what makes ADHD that is specific to these things. First, these inattention and these impulsivity and mm-hmm. hyperactivity behaviors actually affect your day to day. Shows up at home.
Yep.
It shows up at work. It shows up with your ability to kind of maintain schedules mm-hmm. with friends and mm-hmm. different things.
I think one of the qualifying criteria is that it shows up in two or more places in your life, right?
Yeah.
So we wouldn't necessarily say that someone that can't pay attention only in school
has ADHD. Yes. Exactly.
Something else. It requires a little bit more exploration.
You'll usually get mixed up.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Which what we were going to talk about later with like generalized anxiety disorder and autism.
Exactly.
Yes. And how oftentimes people are maybe misdiagnosed with generalized anxiety. And then we come to find out that it's probably more so ADHD. Sometimes they can coexist as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like think about the experience of like not being able to complete a task.
It's
really creates a lot of anxiety.
Anxiety around it.
There can be a little bit of
overlap.
Both or mm-hmm. overlap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you want to look at, not only as if you are a practicing clinician, but also for those that are untrained, you want to look at the how early you started to notice these things affected your day-to-day. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I was looking at is that symptoms of ADHD usually present before the age of 12.
Yep.
So you'll start to see like kids, like first, the inability to keep the room clean. That's something that you probably would see
in
most kids. But there's this very specific, like, specificity behind it, right? It's like you have to give clear instructions because if you don't give a kid a clear, just clean your room. They'll clean it to their limits of what their understanding of what that is. So there often needs to be a lot more coaching, a lot more simplifying, a lot more
patience.
Patience. That's regardless if your kid has ADHD or not, you should be patient.
But yes, even more patience. Yeah.
You'll see it with the kid who tends to have like meltdowns, but it's like, but they're quick to also recover, right? Like they will maybe feel some type of way because they're not getting a math problem well. Like that's where you'll see that frustration around like, this is hard. I don't want to do it. I don't want to read.
Yeah.
That's also pretty big. When kids have problems with reading, it's usually either they have some type of learning disability or they have the ADHD.
So let me ask you guys something. Why do you think, and we hear it a lot, it's becoming more prevalent to the reader? Like now you hear a lot about adult ADHD, ADHD. Why do you think it's like becoming so prevalent where now and people are not, it's not even a shame, but have this belief like, well, probably TikTok and Instagram tell them that, but like
more access, right?
Yeah.
People just generally have more access to information about it and more language that is palatable, right? So there's just more language around it. When we were growing up, ADHD was like a hot thing. So I would say like probably between like 97 and 2000, hella people were getting diagnosed with ADHD. And I think some of that was coming from like, this is the new hot thing, but also like research. Like we are needing to do research. We're needing to understand more of these behaviors that are showing up in kids. Also the pharmaceuticals, right?
Like
Ritalin was a really popular
thing.
So in order for, I mean, I hate to say it, but in order for like pharmaceuticals to survive, somebody's got to have the disorder. So I think that perhaps contributed to a lot of people being misdiagnosed or like that being the buzzword. And I think that that kind of led to some of like, some of my own experience with being overlooked with ADHD. I think I was tested probably in like the second or third grade. I was a very rambunctious kid. I often had outbursts. I often had very, very big emotions. And I think the thing that prompted my mom to get me tested was we had like comp exams, like in third grade, where we had to do like our comprehensive exams. And for 3 hours of the test, I drew holes in my paper, like erased holes, drew holes. My teacher kept coming over to remind me to like answer the questions, do the time, write slowly. So then my mom convinced the teacher to let me take it again. And I did the same thing. So she's like, okay. I mean, and I'm black, so like
I was about to say,
look like you're gonna get your ass beat at school. And like you know what you're doing. And
yeah,
I think that like it happening again after the consequence was introduced, I think that maybe prompted my mom to say like, well, there's something else. So I recall getting tested, but there was a big push for like people to just take medication. And my mom being a teacher, she wasn't for it. So it was kind of just like, I'm not going to give you medication, but nobody is going to give a fuck about you having a challenge with your brain. You need to tighten up. So then that caused my household life to be extremely rigid.
Yeah.
There was like a lot of rigidness around what I ate.
Yeah.
There was a timer for me to do my homework.
Yeah.
There was one day a week that I could watch TV.
Yeah.
There was so much structure. I think that it kind of helped me to like cope and maybe even encourage some masking. Like,
yeah,
this is how I'm supposed to act.
When
I'm in these spaces. Yeah. But yeah, I would say that my experience was a little bit different than the reader because I found out earlier and like shifted my life around that. But I think when I got to grad school, I'm like, I wish I was on medication.
No, but mine was a little bit different. So I was still younger, but I think I might have shared this already on the podcast was when I came here when I was like eight. I came here as eight. So maybe around nine, they put me in school. But I had a hard time like staying focused because back home I was in a school that was very active. I wasn't sitting for 8 hours. And I remember I wasn't doing well. I had struggles staying focused and I kept moving. I kept being disruptive. Just like all these things were happening. And I remember them talking to my mom, about like, hey, you know, do you want to get her tested? Because I was new here, but there was a language thing, like ADHD, da da da. And my mother, like I always say, she was just like, no, she's fine, da 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 da, whatever. They didn't. But then it kept, she was like, put her in the front and so forth and so on. Then she'll be fine. She was like, she just, and this, you know, to your point, when you go to school, you need to stop doing this. You need to pay attention.
Yeah.
You need to da 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 da.
Don't have them call me.
There's nothing wrong with you. Do you know what they're going to do? Like, I was like, okay. So I remember going to your point, like, but I had a hard time. And then, so it became to, okay, something is not okay here. And then I remember, I can't recall whether I got tested or not, but I did recall, and I talked to my mom about this, we called them asking, does she want to put me on medication, Ritalin? She's like, I'm not putting my child on no damn medication. Like, my mother literally was like, it's a no.
People that I know that got on Ritalin, it changed their whole personality.
Yeah.
Like, they straight up went from, like, super big energy, jovial kid to, like, mute.
Yeah, see? But there was a...
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a... Yeah, that was a thing with Ritalin, too. So, I didn't, but my... So, this is where you and I connected, where... Home, everything became structured. And when I had to take tests, I had to be in a separate room. And the kids, I had like, because of the English portion too, I also had like a one-on-one like learning type thing going on. So there was accommodations that was put in place for me, outside of the medication.
Yeah.
So I would say my diagnosis came around that age.
My experience completely different.
Exactly.
No, mine is probably way more similar to
the
that
reader.
Of
yeah.
The reader. So another aspect to think about is there's usually a genetic component.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's a very short line of difference between a parent. Someone in the
girl, I think our whole family is ADHD. Shit, my mother. Thank you. My mother, our whole family. My sister is ADHD as fuck. Like, yeah.
So growing up, it wasn't me that was the focus of stuff because, like you had said, the differences between boys and girls is that boys often show up behaviorally in ways that are louder.
More aggressive.
And what's exactly. More, like, more calls from the school because this person is either getting into the fights, roaming around in school, just like literally being loud and making noises. Girls tend to be socially conditioned to be agreeable, to be quiet, to be, you know, kind. And if they aren't, they are ostracized and like pointed out and then almost having to. So in my household, I'm the oldest. So there's already this, like, you need to show up in a particular way, which I've talked about multiple times here.
Yeah.
But my brother is the, what I would say, falls underneath a combined type. But I would say he's probably more leaning toward the hyperactivity side.
Mm-hmm.
And so with school for him, he's the one that is running around in class.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had to go to class. And this is when we're talking about, like, elementary school. So well before he's turned 12, has to go into class and sit in class because he can't sit
having
still.
A problem with.
He's acting up. He's doing all of these like other things. My parents never had to come to my class because I would be doing what I was supposed to be doing or sitting and, you know, all of that stuff. And so he would constantly, a lot of the behavioral, accommodations were to mm-hmm. him, but it wasn't like, oh, he has to sit in the front of the class, or, oh, we're at home, you can't watch TV and all these other mm-hmm. things. It was like at school they would.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Attempt to try to like assist him by like giving him other things or having my parents like come to the school. Like that's pretty much was the April like.
And sometimes is that like, is very like punishment discipline.
Oh no, 1000%. 1000%. And so that was the focus, is that like, oh, your brother, he has challenges with sitting still. He has challenges with his handwriting. He has challenges with, like, he doesn't like to read. Like, that's, like, his whole thing. He's more of the play. And they'll often use the word, oh, you're the class clown.
Yeah.
That is the term they will usually use for someone who has ADHD that's diagnosed. Is, oh, you're the joker of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So we fast forward into, like, past adulthood, and I'm, like, noticing certain things that have always been there, but it wasn't until my sister got diagnosed around the same age as this person that like, oh, you have ADHD.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's the reading for me. I like to read. I love to read, but I had to slow myself down because if I'm not paying attention, I'll read the same line.
The same line.
Yeah. Over and over.
And to the point where I'll either read it out loud in order to focus me, or I have to use my hand to trace it. Right.
And thinking about the kids are mean as fuck. So just imagine the idea of like, I'm already anxious about reading out loud. Yes. Then I'm trying to trace it with my finger.
Yeah.
I got bullied for that.
So it's the reading part. I was always in honors classes, the accelerated classes. So
that
it's like
GT, the pipeline to ADHD.
Yes, because they give you something. They need you to have something to do.
Stimulating.
So a lot of my progress reports and report cards would say Stephanie is great in school, but she talks
too much.
She's always talking. She's always engaging with her peers. She's always like in like moving around.
Yeah.
In high school, I now remember I would during transitions from classes. I would go to my class. I would get there early to then drop my bag off and walk around to school. Literally to talk to people, engage with folks.
No, they were looking for me in the hallway.
Because I was, I was a good student. Yeah. I was, fun.
You went under
nobody really would question, but I would literally the first 15
minutes. You went under
walking around just like pacing or doing stuff, where I would leave out of class to hang out with my them. Friends during the breaks and stuff. So that's another thing, just not being able to sit down.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was writing papers. Writing papers were like, I would rather
procrastinate.
Just how to organize it as well.
Because my mind is, again, not knowing. It's a multiple step thing.
Yeah.
First, you got to sit down, figure out what the idea is. Then you got to make an outline. I fucking hated outlines, bro. I'm like, I would rather let's just go to write the paper.
Yes.
You're talking about rough draft, second draft, third draft.
One. Procrastination is huge when ADHD. Yes, I lived off of a high. Yeah. Every paper, every study, every test was last minute.
24 to 48 hours.
And then you get a high because you perform well.
My dissertation ended up being like 42 pages long, and I wrote that shit in a week.
Yes.
Which is insane because the class is set up.
Yeah.
So you turn in bit by bit. One at a time.
Same. Yeah.
And I couldn't, and mind you, and I could not keep up with things like that because my brain would be like, oh, this is not due.
It's until not ready. I need the fire. So
my mind is not correlating that like, oh, this needs to get done right now. So it would be the pushing. It would be, and then my mind doing multiple tasks at once. Talk about not knowing what order to do stuff. I'm writing the paper and editing at the same time and proofreading. And so it's making the process longer, more like literally excruciating to me that I don't want to do. Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All of that stuff. So for me, it was very hard for me to be able to admit that I had ADHD and that it was, as I got older, getting to the point where it was impacting me, because for most of my life, I had been able to like get over it.
Yeah.
I'd been able to excel. I've been known as the person who's smart. So if you're known as this person who is excelling, who is academically sound, but there's this thing like, oh, well, maybe your brain doesn't work. Now it's like, wait, that's not, I can get through it. Like I can figure out my way.
And so, how long you think you pushed yourself until you actually were like, okay, I need to figure this out.
Sure, there was some inklings of it, probably like post 30, my brain shifted.
Shit changed.
COVID, I don't know what it was, but definitely post 30, my brain shifted and the ways in which that I got access.
I wonder if your frontal cortex was like fully developed.
It takes longer for people with ADHD to maybe have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Might be on to,
and most people are like 25 to 27 or a neurotypical brain, but people that experience some sort of neurodivergence, which can be ADHD as well, will kind of have a later full development of
that. Well, you taught me something there though, because I didn't know, because I do know that when
I recently just read that maybe sometime last year. Yeah.
Because I just noticed that like the ways in which that I would use my brain, like how quickly, because we talk about like the speed that ADHD's brain works. Like when you get a handle on that, Jones, you get a rein on that, you feel like invincible because your mind processes and sees.
Thank you.
And then all of a sudden, it's like I hit a wall and I was like,
what's happening?
I'm not grasping. The word is there, but I can't take it out of the air bubble that is into space. So it wasn't until then that I started noticing things, but then also relationships.
That
my partners are saying things like, you know, your space isn't always that, you know, put together. Mm-hmm. Would you like me to help you with this? Or like, oh, like there's dishes still in your sink, or you, And so those things also used to like annoy me. Because it's like, oh, now you're judging me, you're putting down my character, you're that saying
shame,
that I'm
the shame come back. Shame,
you're saying that I'm like, you know, no one ever called me dirty, but it almost felt
like that's what they were saying. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just my brain did not
that part
give a fuck about dishes or doing the laundry or all this other stuff. It was like, oh, this thing that takes multiple steps.
But that's the priority part, right? We tend to prioritize like certain things that are easy to like complete compared to, okay, this is going to take the exactly.
Yeah.
That's the word.
And so one thing that the confessional talked about too is just the feelings that come up around getting a late diagnosis, right?
Yeah.
It's almost and specifically being angry, right?
Yeah.
Like being angry about the fact that she perhaps missed out on resources and understanding and was made to feel like you are a problem versus like you're having an experience. So I think that one thing that is really helpful for people who, whether they get a diagnosis at a young age or in later stages in their life, is the acceptance piece, right? Being able to accept that, like, this is something that is chronic. It's not just like, I've got a cold and it's going to go away if I do these things, right? Mm-hmm. It's something that impacts your brain over time and is just more so like, I think differently. I operate differently. Not even necessarily something that needs to be fixed, which is how we kind of get into the masking and perfectionism and stuff.
One thing I also want to tell the reader is the fact that there's an anger and frustration that went with her parents.
Yeah.
And I want to say she said she was African-American, right? Yeah. So in our community, I want her to, you have to work on releasing that, because when you know better, you actually do better. Because how the lack of education or psychoeducation that goes into ADHD or even being weaponized, being weaponized with a diagnosis and a labeling is something that we stay away from.
For sure.
And remember, we are taught, like to, I think the point that she was making, to work 10 times harder, push harder, or even that narrative when you would, daydream. I see, you know, my sister was someone who liked daydream a lot, right? But then being called like you being lazy. You know what I mean?
No, they call you, spacey.
Oh, spacey. You're spacey. Yes. So part of that is also acknowledging the fact that I think as a community, we need to have a healing around the fact that, yes, colonize, label us, use us, and they still do to some capacity. And at the same time, how can we not deny ourselves in understanding what is happening to us without feeling, with the right proper doctor, somebody you trust, and without feeling like, oh, you just want to stamp something on me.
Oh, I know that for sure.
Or you want to have. Yeah. So I think there's a sense of forgiveness and understanding that has to happen with her parents around releasing all of that.
Yeah.
But also their own shame. We've been talking about shame of caring because for the longest time, I felt like something was wrong with me.
Yeah.
Like I had issue and things like that. And acknowledging like you know, it's not a you thing, but also like looking at what do I also need to, I know for me it's also because mine was managed because of the skills and things that was put in place. Now in my 40s, it's like, it's a struggle.
Have to get back to it's a
struggle.
Yeah.
And I realized I had to do that. And I recently talked to my doctor about getting on medication and started because I was struggling about just, I would stay and try to complete a fucking clinical note. One fucking note to.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Like an hour. 35 minutes. You like, why? It's staring at that shit and don't even want to do it. So I think it's also like me needing to, you know, having to understand, like, no matter what age you are, it's not something you heal from. But to your point, there's a sense of managing consistency and that adapting. Has to happen.
That's the part.
Thank you.
The adapting piece. Because this is a disorder, a diagnosis that is ever changing with
yes.
you.
Right? Yes. So
that's, and that's
yes.
the part that's like, oh, look, yeah. I mastered it in my 20s. Then
yes.
Turn 30.
In this yes. way or in this particular
yeah.
environment.
Yes. Yeah.
I mastered
yeah.
when I was single. Now I'm in a relationship.
I'll yeah. give an example of that too, right? Like, I think that when there is like particular parameters around things, mm-hmm. it's much easier for a person with ADHD to engage, right?
Yeah. yeah.
So I find myself being very mm-hmm. rigid at mm-hmm. work mm-hmm. because there's a specific job to do,
yeah.
a specific task, there's a specific yeah. expectation. And so I do well at that.
Yep.
I perform in that space. But if it's more like, if I have more Free. Like a loose expectations mm-hmm. or we're not really sure what it is, mm-hmm. it's really hard for me to prioritize, to organize my tasks, to like get things done. Mm-hmm. And that definitely showed up for me like in grad school, some of my courses being self-paced. I'm definitely not a girly that can do online school.
Hell no.
I need yeah. that classroom.
Thank
I need
you.
To hold me accountable. Mm-hmm. I need to be able to look at like, these are my assignments. This mm-hmm. is what I need to do. And organize myself in that way. I do not have the discipline to like do it on my own. As I'm like more in a space now where I manage my own schedule, I have definitely noticed that I quite frequently overbook myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that now that is like that is
part of the symptomology.
ADHD trait.
Part of that symptomology. Yeah.
Like a skewed idea.
Yeah.
Like, what time is.
And yeah.
That correlates to what my capacity is.
Mm-hmm. Please talk more about that.
Yes, the time blindness. So the term that you'll probably see on TikTok is time blindness. And that can perhaps happen in a couple of different ways. So my example is more so like not knowing how to gauge the amount of time that it takes for a particular task. Mm-hmm. And when you are feeling that, like you said earlier, like when you got it going or like I've got it organized, you do feel invincible, right? Yeah. So you feel like I can do all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Now I fucking booked, I booked 8 sessions.
Well, we know Notorious Monroe
because super vision. There's a lot of times that Tyler will
and I make my own damn schedule. Like,
yes.
Honestly, I finished my last client at 8 p.m. every single day. I'm not looking at, mind you, our ADHD works different.
Yes.
One thing about me.
Yeah, you different. Tyler and I are the same in that.
Y'all,
I will have back to back to back to back to back to back until straight
not
through.
Really realizing until like something. It has to be like a physical thing that kind of brings me back into it.
So
oftentimes that'll also impact my eating.
Yes.
Like not being able to gauge how much time that it'll take or how much time I need to designate to eating or how much time it'll take me to figure out what I want to eat.
And
the decision making around what I want to eat.
Yes.
I kind of realize now that maybe kind of led to some of my disordered eating as well, just like restricting because it was taking too much mental capacity for me to think about what I wanted to eat.
Exactly. That's a good one. Exactly. That's a good one.
Yeah,
that's like, a good
people
one.
People forget that ADHD is kind of being reconfigured to be more of like a dopamine seeking thing.
Versus
an attention thing. Because if food and eating doesn't fire dopamine in your brain.
Right.
That's not going to be something that's going to take a lot of brain power. To me, though, food be light as motherfucker. That is one thing that I will not forget to do unless I am in the burnout phase, and which is what you're referring to, is that ADHD runs on a cycle.
Yeah.
This comes from one of my supervisees, one of my colleagues, shout out to you, girl. But she talked about the burnout cycle that comes with ADHD, where you have that hyperactive, where you are literally firing 150%.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing all the things, every single thing on your task. You're outputting so much energy. But you do that, and then on the flip side, you burnt out all your reserves.
Yeah.
So I literally have no energy to do
anything.
Mm-hmm. And the recoil of that is so like visceral and so like sharp, where you go from all of it. You could be over performing for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Then the last week of the month, which probably for us is usually the most pivotal part.
Yes.
That's when billing and all this other stuff is. You have nothing to give, and then everything feels like it's
crumbled. It's right now.
All at the same time. So you talked about the time blindness looking like either A, not knowing how much time something will take. I think this is a newer term that is maybe being just like renamed in TikTok, but they called it time optimism. And I thought that was so key.
Yeah.
Where you feel like
I have more time than you do.
Exactly. Yes. You can do more things in a certain allotted of time. Mind you, that happened to me this morning. I was literally
happens to us every time we come to
I
lie to ourselves.
Cause most folks, at least for me,
we work well when we started doing at this house. Yeah.
Yes, like, we did a lot better. Yes. That definitely helped you for a lot.
Yes.
But like for example, I was up at like 6:45. I did not leave my bed until 8:30 because again, that time blindness, I didn't realize
being
on my phone or me watching TV was going to take me to then all of a sudden I'm looking at the clock. Oh shit.
It's and now you're rushing.
I'm like, I can get done in an hour.
Yeah.
I can do my makeup. I can shower. I can figure out what I'm going to wear. I'm going to do my hair. All that.
Yes.
Mind will do that. It's like, oh yeah, I can do this. And then I'm looking at the time.
We call it
Delulu.
Yes.
Right? But it's time Delulu, I guess.
Yeah. Yes.
That's just one of the things.
No, that happened to me. That happened to me.
My second one is the paralysis that will come sometimes when it's the opposite. I'm not optimistic. I'm like contemplating in my mind how many hours I have between tasks. Like I wake up during my work week and I'll be like, okay, I woke up at 7:00. My first client is at 10:30. Do I have enough time to go to the gym? I'll be telling myself, I don't have enough time.
Yes. For me as well, right? Like, because I make my own schedule, I have gotten much better at carving out a block of time for myself.
but I won't leave the house.
Yeah.
I have like a lot of like, I can't go to lunch somewhere. I can't meet anybody for lunch and get back on time.
Yeah.
I can't go So I just don't see the light of day for a lot of folks,
a lot of my clients have talked about that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I have a doctor's appointment at 3. I don't leave the house the whole day.
You know, something, I'm married to my counterpart is also ADHD chair. So one thing that's showing up, and we talking about this, I could be taught, and part of that could be with aging, you know, I'm not trying to tell myself, but I do think that's part of like the symptomology that kind of came back for me around, like, I could say, okay, I have to do this, I have to do that, and be completely forgetting what I had to do.
It's not in my face.
Or not a reminder?
Yes. Exactly. So I think what's been getting me a lot is the forgetting thing. Like, you know, I have clients like, oh, you know, I need this letter. I was like, okay, I'll get to it right away. And then I'll jump into a session, then completely forgot that I have to do it. Fuck. And then you try to do it.
Right now?
Exactly.
I'm straight up with my clients.
Yeah.
Let me write this shit down and send it to you right now. Because I'm a human being.
Yeah. What I've been getting from, you know, my loved ones, including y'all, is that, no, you never told me that. I be thinking, I be telling somebody something.
Oh, yeah.
And then I be forgetting to tell. No. And in my brain, I feel like, oh, we had this conversation.
In my relationship, right?
Thank you.
I also have a partner who experiences ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of had to have a come to Jesus moment with each other because we both sometimes forget things and get triggered by like, you didn't say that. Or I didn't say that, right?
Yeah.
So we have talked, we had a safe word of like, I don't remember that versus you didn't say it.
I don't recall.
Right.
I don't recall that conversation
versus you didn't say it.
Yeah. Maybe I should try to teach my partner that, be like, I don't recall. Of course you don't. You don't recall anything that you need to recall. I get judgment.
Baby, it would be lost. I don't know where the wallet is.
Yes.
I don't know where the phone is. The phone is never charged.
Oh, that's my husband. He can tell you where his wallet is. It'll be just,
That's for me. I just put things in the same place. Yeah. That was my way.
But that's your adaptation, right?
Yes.
So I hyper, you know, jacked the whole situation.
Yeah.
That my keys are always in the same place.
Yeah.
And if it's not in the same place, I'm fucked.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I genuinely do not know.
Yeah.
Where could it
be? For sure. Yeah.
So there is the time challenges. There is the decision
forgetting.
Fatigue. What are you guys' thoughts about the emotional dysregulation?
Yes.
Tell me a little bit more about like how that has kind of shown up for you guys.
So the,
Go ahead.
I was going to say that the part that, that Stephanie talked about earlier, right? Your prefrontal cortex.
Yes.
That is also your regulation space.
Yes.
The thing that helps you to like gauge. Like the intensity
emotions, feelings, yeah.
How we need to respond to this situation.
Mm-hmm.
So when you experience ADHD, that can sometimes be a bit faulty. So the crime doesn't match the punishment.
Mm-hmm.
So that might look like I have very big emotions about something. I'm very reactive. Mm-hmm. It can also look like I'm very like attached to this person.
Yeah.
Romantically, it can look like I think I have really big, intense feelings of like love and attachment to this person when it's really more so like this.
Or yeah.
If the person makes one mistake
and you
feel really outraged, extremely distrustful, extremely hateful.
Hold on to arguments, like struggling and letting them go.
Because you
become petty.
I'm ready for an argument.
No, yes.
And my low-key, you kind of enjoy it.
And I got the,
the dopamine, you be getting
like, high. It's a high. Like, it's a high.
Not stop until I win.
Yeah. Well, you know, I feel like as I got older, that has shifted. The argument, you know, I would, don't get me wrong.
That's right. The urge comes
Try
up.
Me if you want to.
You're lying and you be
Cause I, no, it be coming out. But I think to the point around like I have a hard time letting things go. I used to have a hard time letting things go. I've gotten so much better, but like if you wrong me, I'm gonna like or if I'm very upset, my de-escalation could take 2 days to really like.
And I'm also not forgiving like, for other
I think
people.
My partner,
yes,
other like people have been wronged.
Yes,
like, people who are close to me, I don't
even. Yeah.
But see, that's my husband. My husband's like, look, if you hurt anybody he loves and he knows about it, he hold on to shit. He ain't fucking with you. Yeah, he ain't fucking with you. He like, okay, well, that's about
done. Intensely sometimes experiencing other people's emotions as well.
Yeah.
Like sometimes people will look at that as like being an empath.
Yeah.
But you could also perhaps have ADHD and very attached.
No, that's a good point to make.
Another symptom that I think that is not talked about frequently is this strong sense of justice and fairness.
Yes.
That will come.
Yes.
I will put that. Are you sure that's not autism? I'm just going to say that. Were you sure?
No.
That's the thing, right? Because things can overlap, right?
And yes.
I think that when we think about the umbrella of neurodivergence,
yeah.
that could be BPD, that could be OCD, that could be autism spectrum disorder, that could also be ADHD, right?
Right.
So there is like a cluster of symptoms that will overlap in all of those things. And we need to kind
what of makes
look
a
at,
difference?
Like, what are the other things
exactly.
that showing up along
And that's why I said no to that. Yeah. But I think it's
so
to your point.
It's not isolated.
It's not.
I wouldn't say that person has ADHD if it was isolated. Yeah. Like this is the only behavior that is showing up.
But
if
right.
it's also paired with the inattentiveness, with the challenges with decision making, then perhaps that's something to explore a little bit.
Yeah.
More. Sleep is
Need it.
Yes.
Or you take a little
too much of it.
Like, it really depends.
Too much of it.
All right.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit for you guys then. How does sleep get impacted for y'all?
I don't.
I
do need it physically.
Yes.
But in my mind, I was like conditioned to believe that like sleep is taking up space for me being able to do. Right.
Yeah.
So I've can very much be good off of like 4 hours and be up for the day and keep going kicking.
You know, it's crazy because my daughter calls it the zoomies.
Yep.
I will be really tired. And the zoomies, like, you know how dogs go like, kids too. So I would be extremely tired. I mean, I'll be on that couch where I'll be like, babe, I'm tired. I will get upstairs, bitch, clean a fucking like burst of energy. Girl, I'm cleaning shit. I'm reading a book. I'm writing. I'm watching something. I'm ticking me talking. But before I look, it's fucking 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And it's like, what is happening?
You gotta get up, ask that.
And you gotta get, and then you still get up, but it's like, then you get that extreme fatigue. So for me, it happened in that sense where even if I close my eyes to Tyler's point where you say you don't need it, girl, I could operate off a 10-minute close my eyes nap and finish the rest of my day.
Yep.
And be like on a high.
Yeah.
But it's strange. And I think sometimes a little bit of insomnia tends to happen.
They're not good for your body either.
Yes. So this is the unhealthy
no
part.
For your body to recharge.
Yeah, that's where like you feel like you cannot sleep because there is a miswiring of the brain.
Right. Yes.
In that moment.
Feeling like I'm going to... when I was younger, it looked like I was going to miss out on some shit.
Yeah.
Like, that was the thing I struggled with sleep, where I was like, I'm going to miss out if I don't go. And my mother used to trick me and be like, you know, the faster you sleep when you get up, the morning's going to come early. So then I used to hold on to like, okay, just sleep so you can do it.
Nothing gets
exactly. So she was smart with that. So I give her,
that was a really good trick.
That her nothing get to is like a very common feeling or something.
Okay, yeah. So... for me, before talking about sleep, and then we'll talk about that, is like mine is that like I could usually, when I was younger, going to sleep wasn't really like an issue. Like I liked sleep. That wasn't like a problem for me. What was an issue was the morning times and feeling groggy.
Yeah.
Or not feeling like I want to get out of the bed. Like I would rather, like I told you guys from today, I woke up at 6 and didn't physically get out of my bed until 8:30. And that happens often with me where I'll be up early, but the motivation, the desire to actually, or even the urgency to move out of my bed. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, I don't have that much time. Now I have to hurry up to get to work, to school, to whatever,
to
what have you. And then the other thing that you had said, Tyler, about,
the go, go, go.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're someone who has ADHD, have you ever noticed that, like, if you're with someone else, like, for example, you're going to the grocery store and you have your thing that you want to do, you want to hurry up and get that thing done and don't want to linger longer than...
To be honest, I think that also is a part of some of, like, the
people pleasing that can sometimes, or like the performance that can come from, or like just like trying to avoid that feeling of inadequacy, like not wanting to be a burden to other people or to like disrupt other people's time.
Interesting.
So I do find that like when I'm paired with someone else in doing a task, I do get it done quicker, but it's not necessarily because I'm more focused. I'm just more anxious
you're
about
like body doubling, like
not even like just talking about like how you said, like if we're at the store, you're trying to hurry up and get your task done. I'm constantly thinking about how is this impacting the other person.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mine was just like, mostly along the lines of like after you were talking about it, it came clear in my mind. If I'm at a place and there's nothing going on or nothing that is of exciting or whatever, I'm ready to like go on to something else.
Yeah.
Like,
yes. The boredom.
My partner struggles with that a lot. And she talks about it like just, she's like, I'm just so impatient. Like even when we go places, like especially if it's a place that like we've built a lot of anticipation around, like it'll be a lot of like, I want to hurry up and get there. But then also like, I want it to hurry up and be over and I want to hurry up and get back to the house. Get back to the safe space, just hurry up.
Something, right? A lot of quickness behind that. And then also, you had said something along the lines of, see, look at that, ADHD green is just talking about it.
Being with another person?
Yeah, well, being with another person, I find that like certain things that they will do will overstimulate me. So somebody who I think has, you have sensory things. So one of the, when I did a training once and they talked about like hypo versus hyper.
Yeah.
So hypo meaning like something is, like maybe like minimal.
Take it
like
away.
Low, yes, reduced. And the hyper is like a lot of it.
Yeah.
Super intense.
Yeah.
So for me, sound, I like loud sounds. Mm-hmm. So I would be the kind of kid that in the morning, turn the music
rock
on,
it up.
Blasting, I'm rocking, getting ready because that helps me get.
Girl, you still like that now, girl.
I'm definitely still
Girl, you still like that now.
To the point, like my sister, who's a bit opposite of me when it comes to that, she's hyper.
Yes.
She's hypo to the, so she,
sound.
To the sound.
The sound is sensitivity. So like, that's my nephew. Like, he did too loud. Yeah.
Putting the music on right now. All yeah. I'm just like,
yes, let's go. Yeah.
Then you, also touch. I'm hyper. I don't like certain
sensory.
I don't like my hands to touching. Be wet. I don't like my feet to be wet. I don't like
that. You are super sensory, yo. It takes off. Yeah.
I don't like to see.
Yeah.
Sight of certain things will like have me icky, hair on the walls, the wetness, like that should
yeah.
Fucking
yeah.
That sensory piece is also one that overlaps with autism.
So yeah.
Oftentimes people will like misdiagnose or just misunderstand that experience altogether.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the way that it shows up for me with having ADHD is that if I am like hyper focused on something, then I get really fixated with things that are outside of that.
Yes. Right?
So an example, I threw a birthday party for my younger cousin at my apartment and I had a very structured way around like how I wanted to do things, a very organized person as a
That's
way
so
to free. Adapt to my ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a list of things that we need. I've assigned people to do their tasks.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm doing my task and the people that I assigned to do their task
ain't
are
doing
not
this.
Doing their task. So as I'm doing the things that I'm doing, I'm trying to pay attention to what I'm doing. And I'll give the prime example. So one of the tasks was.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of. And there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Cooking some food on the grill. I was doing something else and I asked my mom to make the veggie burgers on the grill. She's, now this is she's also in denial about having HD, but she's with the baby, my nephew, running behind him, but also making the burgers. And the burgers got burnt. And I thought I wanted to fucking flip. I wanted to cancel the party.
No, but that's Sophie. Yeah, but that's Sophie, my child. Like, she gets extreme.
So then it becomes, my family looks at me like, oh God, here she goes again. She's nasty. She's like, why are you so upset? And I'm like,
you burnt my fucking burger.
And these burgers are like $20.
Like, I've been, mind you, it's me getting mad and it's not even me in the experience. I've been there before. I'm the one that's doing all this planning. I've hyperfixated and
you
do what you said you were gonna do. Like, so it drove me crazy. Mm-hmm.
So you and Sophie will relate on that. But mine is the obsessed. I get obsessed and fixated with stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I would, like, if I like something, I am going beyond, above, whatever. Even down to, if I like a pair of shoes, I'm getting every fucking color. That obsesses.
And that's my
that's what shows up for me. Because that's what Kel be like, how many pair of Jordans we need? Any other one that kind of look different with a different pattern? That's how many we need. One thing I wanted to say, because I know in one of our episodes, we talked about anxious attachment. Imagine someone with ADHD. I could imagine it because I experienced it.
Imagine myself.
Right? You anxious attachment and you got ADHD.
Yeah. Because I think that hyperfixation can also happen with people, right? Like being fixated with like the feeling that you get with being attached to a person or like being cared for in some way can really kind of have you holding on. And you hear that with anxious attachment, you really are like holding on to that for dear life.
Exactly.
For sure.
It's a good deal.
One of the more shameful symptoms at the moment of transparency, one of the symptoms that brings a lot of shame to me is like the financial piece.
Yeah.
Spending challenges. Like the organizing.
I'm with you, sis.
Like being able to save has been like
a struggle.
Such a struggle for me. And I think that I only in the past couple of years have I really been able to like put the pieces together around like, okay, perhaps no budgeting there's no budgeting that's going to be able to like help me manage this particular thing. Cause like I've got a budget, I've got separate bank accounts and the money be running a hole in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
I really had to kind of sit and like, what is this?
I struggle with the same thing. And I think it wasn't until I carried the shame, but I think it wasn't until I got married where, you know, Kelvin, like he's good with money. He's way better than money than I am. I know he probably looking left eye right now because we're still trying to work on it. But I think having someone who because I'm good at following direction. So if he's like, we need to do da 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 da, I mean, I still have a temper tantrum around it, but it's a direction for me to focus on. But like Tyler, like I would have separate account when I was by myself. I'm like, I'm making the money. I have it. I know how to make it. Like you tend to do reason giving and that's the impulsive, like, because we have something on hand, we're going to be reactive. We're going to get it.
It's also that dopamine part, right?
Yes.
Like buying yourself something.
It's a high.
Especially now with shopping, online shopping really kicked that shit in the gear for me.
Yes.
Like before
the pandemic.
There's only so much of being in the mall or in the store that I can tolerate.
Exactly.
But once online shopping started happening, I'm like getting a package every week.
Also, it's that dope. It's dope.
Yeah. That's
you can't your brain at times is starved or at least set to the filter where it's also looking for that. And shopping is literally like ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Scrolling, ding, 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 eating, ding, like all of these things that we tend to like overindulge in. Because that's the thing. It's an overindulgence.
Yeah.
You can look at it in any different way. Shopping, eating, having sex.
I was going to say, this kind of leads to our the correlation between ADHD and addiction, right? Like how you can get very fixated on things to the point where you're now addicted to this feeling of dopamine. Mm-hmm. And that can show up in process stuff like gambling, shopping,
sex,
internet.
Yes.
That can show up in physical stuff like sex, drugs, drinking, or just being addicted to the party, right?
The dependency. Like,
to the high of being around people.
Chaos.
Yeah.
Turned up. Yes. Yeah, and so I think that
oftentimes that's not really talked about.
Yeah.
Or there's more shame around it. So people aren't sharing that those are their experiences. And
yeah.
So those are sometimes some of the symptoms that kind of get overlooked.
Yeah.
Especially with addiction, because there's Agreed. So much like negative
stigma. Negative stigma that come with it. Yeah. And not understanding that a lot of times someone with an ADHD brain who become addicted to substances are literally trying to quiet their mind and manage and function. I remember when I realized like weed smoke like slowed my brain down. I'm like, oh fuck yeah. I want ganja all the time. Yeah. You know, it went to the point where it was like stabilizing me in that point. Or even like alcohol would quiet my mind. I'm Caribbean. I come from a fucking family who's alcoholics anyway, whether they believe it or not. But it's that part of like, you know, understand that people are, with addiction, people are always trying to manage. And sometimes people are not addicted by choice. Sometimes it's a way of coping and managing and numbing.
I mean, any person that I've worked with around addiction was trying to cope with something.
Exactly. So, and then, so I get annoyed. People don't understand. I get not necessarily triggered, but I'm like, you can't say, well, they have a choice. They can always make a choice. No.
Right.
Addiction is so strong and powerful that a dependency, it's a dependency on something.
Yeah.
This gets me to function in a certain state and make me feel something. And when you attach yourself to these things, it's hard to detach yourself from it. Yes. And if you are someone with ADHD, where we talk about fixation and obsession and like impulsive, it's hard when something that you that helps you function.
Yeah.
Now you got to detach from it.
Or even being able to recognize like the harm that it is doing because it's
exactly
so much relief this other.
Exactly.
And I think the lack of awareness also contributes, the lack of awareness that this busyness, this racing, this kind of like 20 car pileup that it feels like is happening in your brain and maybe even in your body is like, what's the word I'm looking for? It's so unbearable.
Yeah.
And it's so like debilitating.
Yeah.
So I often see online when I watch folks who have the later diagnosis, especially women, there's this devastation and this despair and this like feeling of hope being rekindled. Actually have the opportunity to move, like
going
back to the confession, like it the people saying that it's a gift, like it becomes a gift once you have been able to create some parameters and to embrace it and then learn to engage with it as something that pushes you in a particular direction,
right? Because we didn't really highlight this too much, but there are certainly symptoms that can be very beneficial.
Yeah.
One of them, like pattern recognition.
Yes.
Helpful in some ways. Sometimes it can be a gift and a curse, but being able to kind of anticipate more things can be helpful.
Mastery.
Picking up on the vibe.
But mastery.
Mastery.
Yeah.
To commit to your crafts and creativity and just like, the creativity component in general. Oftentimes people that I know personally that experience ADHD or even some of my clients are very creative people because they have the capacity to think outside of the expectation or the structured box.
And yeah. So
I think those things, there can be a lot of emphasis on like the ways that ADHD is harmful to you.
Yeah.
When really it's just an experience. And experiences come with things that work and things that don't work. And so managing ADHD is more so about like, how can I work with what's working for me? And how can I learn to tolerate the things that are not?
Yes.
But I also think once you get the diagnosis of ADHD, it's like you were given a map to a unexplorable or an uncharted terrain.
Yep.
Because that's really what it was like, right? You were walking around with this high ass grass.
Yep.
You couldn't see in front of you. You couldn't see behind you. You keep getting stuck in this thing. You can't figure out. And then all of a sudden somebody tells you, hey, you have ADHD. Now I have a map that gives me
the points of putting together.
Exactly. Now I'm like, oh, I'm in this part of it now.
Yeah.
I'm able to do this in order for me to get back to the
room. Yeah.
That's really what the diagnosis provides you.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you freedom from struggle.
Yes.
It just acknowledges what the struggle is. Potentially gives you a tool to kind of get around it.
Yeah. Agreed.
And so that's how I had to kind of like conceptualize it in my mind when I got to the point of like fully acknowledging and embracing that, yes, this is something that I experience. Mm-hmm. And also being open to taking, you know, medication, because for the longest, from when I started doing therapy, I didn't want to take medication, but I also wasn't a big sponsor of people being medicated because I came from the time where I felt like people were being overly diagnosed. Medicated.
Yes. Yes.
Medicated to the point where we're experiencing that zombie-esque feeling. And so I was very much like, oh, hell no. Like there has to be other natural, holistic
ways
to do things. And mind you, the top treatment for ADHD is a combination of psychotherapy and skill work and coaching in addition to medication because of the fact that it is a developmental thing that our brain works and doesn't work in a particular way. There's a reason why Adderall and Ritalin, they chose stimulants to help us
because
we need to be able to fight off the fatigue aspect that shows up that keeps us without being able to like get contact with parts of our brain. Mm-hmm. Like that's what makes it where we can't focus and we can't, there's an overhaul of stuff.
Yeah. So
medication helps bring that equilibrium and open us to be able to like experience more things. So it took me a while to be able to be like, actually, like I need this. This is helpful. And this is not an indication of my lacking.
Right?
Yeah. Because that's something that was really like, was like, oh, like this really confirms that there's something wrong. These people have been right this whole time. Like I wasn't doing a good enough job of like masking or what's it called? Keeping up the facade that I was okay.
And even you saying the part about medication, I kind of laughed to myself because like my biggest challenge with taking medication is remembering to take it.
Yeah. Yeah. To create a bit of a...
Yeah, same here. Well, yeah, yeah.
All right, do we want to get into the listener letter?
Yes.
Cool. Let's do that. I just realized how wild an email I sent during a manic episode over a year ago really was. And honestly, it's super embarrassing. I came across a message from a former friend asking me not to contact him again. And I don't blame him at all. Apparently, I sent a jumbled email that included asking if I could date his daughter, who might have just been in college at the time, because I thought I was getting signs from God that she was my soulmate. It's cringy to even type that now, but at least I didn't act beyond that message. Has anyone else had to come to terms with the fallout from a manic episode after the fact? How do you move through the shame without spiraling? Okay.
Hey,
so yes, manic episodes. What diagnosis is that connected with?
Trauma and
a lot of different old different things. Like you could do bipolar.
Yes, it could be trauma, but for most part, manic episodes are usually connected to some level of bipolar diagnosis. But okay, so this person had a manic episode and sent an email to his friend asking to date his daughter.
Interesting.
I think that I like that the reader was like accepting and accountable for their impact. Despite like being in a manic episode, right? Like they did not try to like excuse or skirt over their involvement and perhaps why the relationship didn't last. So I think they even acknowledged like, I probably wouldn't talk to me either if I showed up in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that part is really important for people to be able to tolerate the feelings that come after you've maybe after you've engaged in a way that was like erratic, right? So like being able to accept that it makes sense that I have shameful feelings.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to get through our feelings is to experience them.
And to experience it. Yeah.
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 So letting yourself
feel that shame.
Have them without participating in the blaming. Mm-hmm. And because he was like, how do you experience shame without spiraling? Well, we know shame lets us know that we're doing something that might
it goes against morality. Yeah.
From our
values. But it goes against morality and values and standards, yeah. Right? And also, if you're dealing with someone who's bipolar, who's in a manic state, and there's deep, like, guilt and regret when you out of mania about actions and things that you've done. And part of that is also acknowledge that if I embrace the shame without having the urge to over apologize or do something about it, then more likely when I have episode, it is taking accountability, but also understanding, like, taking accountability is not equaling to, okay, I will be forgiven, I will excusing, this makes it okay. You know, people should understand, and not really using your diagnosis as reason giving for your behavior. Exactly. Like, as a behavior. So I would tell, I mean, honestly, when it comes to shame, I would say acknowledge and own shame so it doesn't own you. That's my motto. Yeah. When shame starts to own you, that's when you start to the unraveling that they're talking about. Because now the shame is controlling you because it goes into, like we always tell clients, like your core sense of inadequacy, failure, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, not enough. All of that kind of feeds into it.
Yeah.
Because shame connects you to a deeper rooted emotion about who you are as a person. And what does that say about me that I engage in these actions. Right. So it is relinquishing shame by owning shame so it doesn't own you.
Yeah.
And at the same time, acknowledging the fact that I made and behave in a way that I was not in my full conscious state to recognize that this is inappropriate or this is not okay. And now that I'm out of that state, and acknowledge that this is inappropriate, this is not okay, I'm going to take ownership with it without reason giving or trying to make sense to others as to why. Because that's the part and like, that goes into a cycle.
That awareness piece being so important,
yes.
Right? Like,
mm-hmm.
And perhaps that is what treatment often looks like.
Mm-hmm.
People, well, depending on the modality, right?
Yeah.
What that treatment can look like with mm-hmm. helping people to recognize when they are maybe getting into that manic space, recognizing the particular behaviors, the feelings and things mm-hmm. that show up so that you can learn to adapt and engage in more like rewarding or helpful behaviors mm-hmm. versus things that are harmful, like making random romantic connections.
Yes.
I also think that there's room for relationship repair. Like
the
reality is that we're all carrying our own shit. And some of us are further along in our journey on managing mm-hmm. that than others.
Mm-hmm.
So there can be a level of understanding if you have a relationship with someone who experiences bipolar or experiences mania. It's okay to find safe spaces to talk about that so that when things happen,
mm-hmm.
one, you can... The people, your support system can help call it out. Like they can
mm-hmm.
call out the safe word.
When that I part.
It's like, you haven't slept in 3 days.
And
mm-hmm. you're sending me these erratic emails.
Yeah.
I can say to you, when we have that relationship, is everything okay?
You're right.
I'm noticing these things about you to help with that awareness. But also when the things happen, being able to go back and take accountability for that.
It. Yeah.
And talking more about like how we can avoid this happening in the future.
Mm-hmm. I think that requires
agreed.
That the person who has the bipolar diagnosis tell their friends
sharing.
And they tell their partner about like
disclosure. There's a sense of self-disclosure. Yeah.
Who have to tell them like what to expect.
Yep.
What are some of the things that I might like, be signs that you want to look out for that mm-hmm. this might be showing up
mm-hmm.
and also kind of normalize that during my manic phases, most folks aren't always as open to or really available mentally to any mm-hmm. feedback. So it's mm-hmm. like, how do you contain and manage during a manic episode? Because most manic episodes maybe last can be, if they're hypomanic, 1 to 2 days. In that area, if they're manic, it can be 4 days to up to a week or mm-hmm. a bit longer than that. So the phase will eventually run out, but it's like, what do we do in that moment to keep that person safe, to keep the situation under some level of control to the point that when the switch does happen, there's less for that person to have to make amends for or take accountability around. Which would
also kind of like intensify that other side.
Exactly.
Right? Intensify that depression piece. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah. Good to you.
All right. Well, this was a great conversation.
It was.
Very personal too.
Very personal to all three of us. Four of us, the recording.
All right.
But yes, thank you for joining us today for Couch Chronicles. If you have any questions or you want us to read any of your listener letters or confessionals, you can find us at couchchroniclestad@gmail.com. And we'll see
our IG handles.
Oh, yes. Our IG handle, Couch Chronicles.
On Instagram.
Our YouTube, Couch Chronicles. Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3. Check us out on all platforms and we'll see you soon.
All right. Subscribe.
Bye, fam.
Bye, guys.